You're listening to 104.3 and 104.7 KHUM Cutton, Eureka, Arcata, and Transit K282 AD in Ferndale. And just a quick shout out to one of our sponsors, Signature Coffee. Make sure to check them out. They're fair trade, organic, and delicious. Feel good about the coffee you drink. Pick up some Signature today. We have Steve Lazar on the phone right now from the Humboldt County Planning and Building Department. I know a lot of people have questions that they want to directly ask him. And if you want to call in and ask them yourself, it's just 786-KHUM. That is 707-786-5486. You can also email studio at khum.com if you do not want to call in.
If you don't want to actually talk to Steve, which is understandable.
Yes. Somebody did go ahead and write in just a moment ago and wanted to say that he wanted to thank Steve Lazar and the Planning Commission and the Water Board staff members that have donated so much of their time facilitating compliance workshops, answering questions from people, and educating the community about compliance. They said that they have done an outstanding job.
But that was from Rob Wall, so.
It's not
kidding.
From Rob Wall.
Just kidding, Steve. Yeah, that's
from an
S. Lazar.
S. Lazar, yeah. All right, we have somebody on the phone. Khum, you're on the air.
Hi, you know, I wanted to understand better what's going to happen to the people that are surrounded by national forest land, like Orleans, for example, or, Trinity County.
Is that something you feel like handling there, Steve, in the couple minutes we got you left?
Quickly I'm just going to dispense with the Trinity County part of the question because, obviously, our ordinance only applies in Humboldt County. But national forest land applies in Humboldt and Trinity County, and it is a major concern for people that are existing operators that their parcel abuts lands held by Uncle Sam, shall we say. So, the regulations as they currently exist would suggest require a 600-foot setback from public land. Part of our settlement negotiations with HumMap allowed for a policy change that we'll be presenting to the Board of Supervisors in September that would allow that 600-foot setback to be relaxed with a special permit, meaning that if you weren't subject to a discretionary permit under whatever size cultivation you fall under as an existing operator, you now would have to go through that discretionary permit process. But it gives us the ability, provided the board adopts these changes to the regulations, to entertain requests for permits, even if you are next to federal land. And so I would still, say to folks in that position to not lose hope. We have a fix that will help them get to the finish line, and it's our goal to see that it gets implemented next month when we bring these amendments.
Should those people continue forward with their application process?
Absolutely. I, like I said, this has already been vetted as part of our settlement negotiations. We'll be presenting it to the board, and I think they'll be largely sympathetic because the goal wasn't to try to make it impossible for people that were in the national forest, but to make it, you know, a conversation that we got at the permit and to make sure that it's an appropriate activity and it's being done in a way that's environmentally responsible.
Awesome. I'm so glad that's going to happen. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. And Steve, we're going to let you go here very shortly, but quickly, before we do, and maybe we'll have time for one more phone call, but what's a good resource for people who still have questions? How can they – what's your personal cell number, Steve?
Well, here's one thing I'll put a plug in. We're going to have Sunday workshops this Sunday and next Sunday, and I will be there personally. So will members of the Cannabis Services Division. Which is we have like five or four planners that are new planners to our department that are just doing cannabis permitting. We do charge $150 for it's going to be like a seminar format essentially down at our office on Sunday between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. And if folks are interested in signing up for the seminar, all they have to do is call 707-268-3795. That's our cannabis hotline. You can call that, or they could send an email to cannabis@co.humboldt.ca.us. So that's cannabis@co.humboldt.ca.us. Anybody who wants to get on one of those workshops for $150, at the end of it, you'll know a lot more about what you're going to be having to deal with to get a permit, and you can decide whether to register and we can even help you get your registration materials together at the workshop. We have room for about 20 or 30 people in our office, and we're going to break out into small groups and talk about individual questions, but start with kind of a question and answer and an overview of the ordinance. So anybody who's out there really hasn't been connected to anything so far or is on the fence, this is a great opportunity without committing much more than $150 in your Sunday to learn a lot and be able to be in a position to make a decision before the 23rd.
Steve, do you have time for one more question from an audience member?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, the next person to call, 707-786-KHUM. That is 707-786-5486. I know a lot of people have been trying to get through. We have time to take one more.
And I'll just say I'm thrilled, and I love the new paradigm where there is now an official Humboldt County email address just called cannabis@co.hum.cal.gov, whatever.
That's awesome. And K-Hum, you're on the air.
Hey, I've been here since 1998, and I got a medical card right away when I moved here. And, you know, I just heard that you guys are going to let people grow a 10-by-10 area outside. Is that the same as inside?
Oh. Did you hear that, Steve?
Yeah, I think I heard it. So,
and we just lost the guys, the gentleman that was just calling. We just lost his phone call by accident. But, yes, go ahead. Answer the question. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sure. So I think what he was alluding to is what you can grow for yourself.
For personal use
under state law now is 100 square feet, and under Humboldt County law, is if it's inside your house, it's 50 square feet, and if it's in your backyard, it's still 100 square feet. So, you know, basically, if that's your paradigm, that's what you get, whether you're in Humboldt County or Mendocino County or whatever. But when it comes to commercial regulations, anytime you're growing for more than yourself, and that's more than 100 square feet, you're subject to permitting under our ordinance. And if over 2,000 square feet, or with water quality impact, enrollment in the regional board program.
Okay, I think this is that gentleman calling back. One second, KM.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's just no way someone can smoke marijuana a whole year off of growing a 10-by-10 area outside. Not going to be enough.
Yeah, and honestly, it's not for us to decide at this point. The state has sort of made the call that 100 square feet is what somebody needs, and I can't really, you know, I can't help you beyond that. That is what your allowance is under state law. And, you know, if you don't like it, you should probably talk to your congressman more than me, honestly.
Well, I don't need 5,000 square feet. I would only need maybe 2,000 square feet. And the other 3,000 would be wasted.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to come for a permit under our regulations, even if you want to grow just for yourself. I don't think we would have a problem with that. But the goal of our program is to deal with commercial operations. So, I can't help you with the 100-square-foot limitation under state law.
I'm sorry. What about my property taxes? Are my property taxes going to go up? How much? I mean, I need to know if they're going to go up 5,000 square feet if I sign up for the minimum, or if I'm only needing 2,000 or 2,500 square feet, can we work a deal out like that?
Yeah, I can't speak to taxation. I would encourage folks to question the assessor's office. I don't suspect that there's going to be a huge property tax increase unless there's major improvements to property. And most of these are in situations where the improvements are fairly minimal as far as, you know, plants in the ground or greenhouses that are of very low value. So I would talk to the assessor's office if you really want to know what your tax bill is going to look like after you get a permit. But I wouldn't expect that it would have a tremendous change. Now, that's not excise tax. Excise tax will be on the ballot. I will be voting on whether to approve it. You will be voting on it as a Humboldt County resident. And you can read for yourself how the excise tax works, but it's based on the anticipated harvest, and it has different $1, $2, $3, depending on the type of cultivation, outdoor, mixed light, and indoor.
Well, I have the paperwork in front of me, and I read it, and it said that the $5,000 is the minimum. So I'm assuming that my property taxes will go up $5,000 a year based on a 5,000-square-foot grow. But I'm saying I only need 2,500 square feet at the most to make it through the year for myself personally.
Once again, you're mixing apples and oranges. Excise tax and property tax are totally different things. And like I said, I don't think your property tax is going to go up significantly as a result of getting a permit. What you will be subject to if you go through a commercial permitting process is if the voters of Humboldt County pass it, an excise tax of $1, $2, or $3, depending on you know, where the board ultimately lands on.
All right, well,
yeah, but I don't want to grow commercially. I don't want to sell any of my medication. I want to grow it for my personal use.
Yeah, like I said, 100 square feet under state law. Take it up with your assembly member,
feet,
right? That's not our rule. 100
square
rules.
Feet will last me 1 month, and then I'll be out of medication for 11 months out of the year.
All right, well, thanks so much for the call, and I think Steve
thanks.
Is saying that is outside of his jurisdiction. And Steve, thanks so much for participating. I'm sorry you've got to go. You got a meeting coming up, but from KHUM Radio and from The Point Radio with the rules, thanks so much for participating. We're going to keep this panel going on with Natalyn DeLapp here of Epic and Adona White of the Water Board. So, Steve, again, thanks so much. Best of luck at the meeting, and hopefully we'll be talking with you soon.
You're listening to KHUM.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Steve. You're listening to KHUM, Radio Without the Rules, and this is your host, Bailey Brown, who's usually your host at this time. And then I also have Andy, who's from The Point.
Executive host, I will say, from The Point Radio.
Host.
Thanks for having me. And we're still joined by Natalyn DeLapp here of the Environmental Protection Information Center and Adona White here of the Water Board, who we have for a little bit longer. And so I think we're going to start off. We may take some calls a little bit later as well, but I think we wanted to chat with Adona here about some letters that are being sent out by the Water Board to property owners. Can you explain a little bit more about those letters and what they're about?
Sure. One of the tools enforcement efforts we're undertaking, we're referring to as enrollment enforcement. And in priority watersheds where we're concerned about the health of beneficial uses, we're doing consulting aerial imagery and identifying properties that look like they should be enrolled in our program, and then sending letters citing the water code, basically saying it appears your property needs to be enrolled. You have 35 days to take action and respond to us by either enrolling in the program or telling us why you don't need to, or telling us you sold the property or whatnot. So we've initiated that effort at the end of June. We sent out a couple hundred letters, and we're doing them in batches in watersheds because we can't do the whole region at once. That would bury us.
Got to save up for more stamps, too.
Yeah. So that initial effort, we've gotten, we're compiling the responses, but many have enrolled and many have contacted consultants. And I'd give a shout out to the consultants in the area who are really working as our partners in getting this program implemented and assisting landowners and operators in navigating the new regs. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, we've heard from the smaller operators that they're not really sure if they need to enroll, so they've contacted us for us to consult with them and do a site visit to determine whether or not their smaller operations
are
required
folks
to enroll.
Under 2,000 square feet.
Yeah, typically. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing those site visits as well, and I would offer that people can contact us, and all our contact info is on our website, and request a site visit. That's one option if they don't have the resources to work with a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
But if people do receive a letter, I would strongly encourage them to follow the directions in the letter and take action and contact us. The main thing we want to see is that people are working towards figuring it out and enrolling if need be. But if they're blowing it off and trying to dodge the letter, that's I don't recommend that. And if people fail to respond, they can start accruing $1,000 a day penalties for failure to report. So that can add up to a big bill rather quickly.
Right.
So I would encourage mm-hmm. people to contact us and work with us.
Natalyn?
I have a question about how long do people have to bring their land up to code? And, you know, if you contact them and you give them one of these enrollment enforcement letters, people then have to fill out the notice of intent to enroll in the Water Board order. How long do they have to get everything done? Do they have to get this done before December 31st, or do they have some time? You know, how does this work?
Sure. Well, with our program, you know, we're not The December 31st deadline, that's not relevant to our program. That's the county ordinance. Generally, it depends on what, if there's issues on the property, threats to water quality, or things aren't meeting our standard conditions, then we want corrective action. So you have 6 months to basically look at the property, identify the problems, and develop a plan. 6 months for that. Then you have, in that plan, you will develop a compliance schedule, how you're going to fix it and by when. Generally speaking, things like road runoff that's delivering directly to a stream, road surface erosion, that's relatively easy to fix. We'd like that stuff dealt with as soon as possible. If you don't have enough water to support your operation, we'd like you to increase your water storage. And, you know, you can increase over time, but the larger the operation, the bigger impact it's going to be. We want you to invest on the front end.
Right.
So kind of keep in sync with, if you're going to grow it, store it. And if you store it, you need a permit. And then, but the more complicated fixes that would require permits from other agencies, perhaps stream crossing replacements,
like
or
stream bed alteration.
Yeah, stream bed alteration.
That's all
agreement.
Fish and wildlife.
Yep. Those will give a longer time frame. We give a maximum of 5 years. Most things we'd like fixed in the first 1 to 3 years. If somebody has a septic that's not in conformance with the Humboldt County Environmental Health Ordinance, that's a little more complicated because it can trigger building permit issues, that we may give up to 5 years on that if there's not an apparent threat to surface water or groundwater. In some cases, people are living on lands that were previously managed for timber harvesting, and they may have some large-scale dirt delivery features that would be considered a legacy feature, and in some cases we may give a 10-year time frame on those. But generally, most of it we'd like 1 to 3 years, but we work with people and recognize the ability to pay in the mix.
And I want to, you know, speak on behalf of the county for a second. So as people start to apply for this permit, you know, there are about 12 performance standards and requirements that are part of this application. One of those is the notice of intent to enroll with the water board. And as you just heard from Adona, you know, the water board is going to work with people on this 1 to 3 to 5 to 10 year timeline to get everything in conformance with the law. The county is going to do the same thing. The county has compliance agreements and provisional licensing. And so it was well understood through public discourse that this is not going to change overnight. And fixing our roads and fixing these culverts and getting the amount of water storage in process, you know, ending bulk water truck deliveries, all of these things are going to take time. It's going to be time consuming and expensive. So, you know, what we need to be looking at is a 1, 3, and 5 year plan so that we're not freaking out that, oh my God, you know, I'm going to have $300,000 worth of fixes that have to happen before this application can even be finalized. That is not the case. People have time as these agencies work with landowners to put together plans. The water board is going to work with the county. The county, you know, we all just know that these things are going to take time. And so the county is really committed to this provisional licensing process and understanding that landowners are going to need time. And I mean, just working with certain agencies like the California Department of Forest and Fire Protection, that agency is still not really sure how they're going to work through this process. So the county's not going to insist that you have these forms when the agency doesn't even know how to deal with it yet. So we just all have to understand that this is a work in progress, and you know, you don't need to get everything done in this first year. We're going to have time to deal with it.
Yeah, this is definitely an evolving process. And for example, if you're storing water for commercial agricultural irrigation, you need an appropriate of water right from the Division of Water Rights. And currently they're working on developing an appropriate of right specifically for commercial cannabis cultivation. So, and that would be out maybe in the next year. So, but the point I think of all of these different rules is get a plan, figure out what issues you need to address, and start moving through it. don't just wait and do nothing.
And how many? So a lot of the consultants, if people start working with consultants, consultants with project management spreadsheets can really help, you know, tease these things apart where, you know, you put together timelines and, you know, these are the things I'm going to get done in year one. This is what the cost will be. These are the things I'm going to get done in year two, year three, year four. And I mean, that's what the consultants are there for, is to hold your hand, walk you through this process. There's been, you know, a lot of consultants that are coming forward that are really there for people. So yeah, you know, if this is something that seems overwhelming, you know, reach out and talk to professionals.
Mm-hmm. Have a lot of people responded to the letters?
Yes.
Are we able to ballpark a figure of perhaps amount of people that are engaging with the water board?
Generally in our order, mm-hmm. you mean? Not necessarily in response to this first batch of letters we sent.
Right.
Your question, Andy. Yes, we've gotten quite a bit of engagement. I mean, it's really a drop in the bucket compared to the number of properties where cultivation's occurring in the North Coast region. But, you know, we have several hundred enrollments and many people, you know, I believe each of the consulting companies around here also have a series of people that they're slowly bringing in their notice of intents and monitoring reporting forms and fees.
Okay.
So, you know, we're making headway. We've gotten enough enrollments to that the fees have covered our staff time in implementing our program, which is the goal. It's a fee-based program. And we'll be hiring additional staff very soon. So
great.
Anyone who's interested and qualified and working for the water board, I'd say go to the website and click on the employment link and get yourself on the state list.
Okay, great.
To be able to apply if you like.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going well. It's still in the hundreds versus thousands right now.
That's correct.
But that's the goal, perhaps.
Yep.
And if we have any people that would like to call in and ask questions, again, right now we have here with us Adonna White of the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board and Natalyn DeLapp, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. Feel free to give us a call. I don't know what the
786-KHUM.
786-KHUM.
And 786-5486.
Okay. And if you have specific questions for Natalyn or Adonna, we can address them to the two of them here. Steve Lazar has left, so if you have any questions regarding planning and building or permitting questions, I know I am wholly unqualified to answer those. Bailey could make some stuff up as well.
Yeah, I can make some stuff up.
So if you have any questions kind of more on the water board angle or environmental regulations, feel free to give us a call. And let me throw this one out maybe to the two of you. Maybe Natalyn can answer some of them. But what are some options for water storage, or what are options opposed to water trucking or illegal, you know, surface water diversions?
We also got an email question that was along these lines as well.
That was mine.
This is maybe not my best area of expertise, but I can kind of, I'll shoot from the hip a little bit. So if people are going to be putting in water storage and they are pulling from any kind of creek, stream, seep, or spring, they're going to need to work with a Department of Fish and Wildlife and likely with an engineering firm, because if people are putting in ponds, they need to be engineered to ensure that the pond is not going to fail. They can also work and buy the big, you know, containment units. You know, it's not ideal to be using bladders, but you know, the big tanks or steel tanks, and you know, or you know, if you don't want to have Fish and Wildlife involved, people can be working with rainwater catchment. And rainwater catchment is the kind of the gold standard. So people can use their road networks, and instead of allowing that water to just flow off their roads and cause a lot of erosion, they can control and channel that water to fill rainwater catchment ponds. You can build rainwater catchment systems off all of your existing building structures, and possibly store enough water just purely through rainwater to meet all of your gardening needs. So that's just kind of my loose one, and you know, maybe Adonna has some more information.
Sure. I mean, the main concern that's come up with respect to water, surface water diversion, is that in the summertime, you know, May through October, That's when people are needing the highest use for their irrigation needs. And that's also the time when stream flows are so low, because around here we have a Mediterranean climate. Mm-hmm. We get all our rain in the wintertime, not in the summertime. So as stream flows decline, the fish and wildlife species, and especially, you know, our salmonid species that are so important to us around here, those are most sensitive. And so it's important that people start to taper down their water use during that summertime period. And if you rely on surface water diversions for your main water source, then we encourage people at the Water Quality Control Board encourages water storage. And that could be in the form of tanks or ponds or bladders for the purposes of meeting the regional board's requirements. That said, if you're diverting from a surface water, you certainly need to consult with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. You may need a stream bed alteration agreement, even if you have a well that may be hydrologically connected to a surface water. You should consult with them and see if you need to notify and get a permit from them. If you are storing water from a surface water source, you need to get a water right from the Division of Water Rights. And both of the links for their agencies and applications are on our website.
Which, do you mind stating the website
sure.
again?
Sure. It's www.waterboards.ca.gov/northcoast. And you click on the cannabis link, and there's a whole bunch of info there. So what else can I say about water storage? We would strongly encourage people to do rainfall catchment. I mean, it's the least regulation-intensive way to capture mm-hmm. water, and it's also the least environmentally damaging way.
Right.
So that said, you know, we would encourage people. Oftentimes, people need to increase their storage over time. If you're really far away, if you're growing way more than you have water storage for, consider dropping down until you can actually have enough storage to keep up with your operations.
Right.
I have another email question. I want to remind people that in addition to calling in at 707-786-5486, you can also email studio@khome.com any questions that you have. The question is, private roads can create a significant sediment load to waterways, and road associations are the best way to provide money for maintenance to decrease these loads. How does the water board handle enforcement when no association is present and neighbors are unwilling to form one?
Yeah, for sure. The person with the question is absolutely right. Sediment is the number one pollutant in our North Coast streams, and the majority of it, or at least a lot of it, and certainly the chronic inputs are from road systems. And some of the worst situations I've been seeing in the field are from shared use roads. And ideally, neighbors would coordinate with each other and have enough investment as a group to upgrade and maintain their roads. And just like on individual parcels that we're talking about, these enrollments, they develop a plan and a prioritization and implement it. The same strategy would work on shared use roads. That said, if people are not able to coordinate with each other for whatever reason, then we're left with enforcement. And we can certainly issue a cleanup and abatement order that names every single property owner that that road crosses. And then we have a tool to ensure that that work can happen. Ideally, people would do that on their own. And we at the Regional Board have just launched a new initiative, the Rural Roads Initiative, in which we're looking to partner with other agencies and nonprofits to provide resources and technical trainings to watershed groups and road associations so that they have better resources and know-how on how to deal with their roads. But doing nothing and only investing in your own parcel, you're not finished. Those shared use roads really do need quite a bit of attention.
Okay, thank you for answering that. It's about time we got to take some moment for some messages from some of our sponsors.
Yeah, and so again, I want to thank Natalie DeLapp here, who might be able to stick around. Donna, sounds like she may need to... Oh, she can stick around for a bit. Okay, great. Okay, so we can keep this going for a little bit longer. So if you have any questions, again, email us at whatever at khum.com.
Studio at khum.com.
Studio at khum.com. Hum.com?
Yeah, khum.com, not KWPT.
That's right. Although, feel free to email Carol Ann, too. She'll have no idea what the hell's going on. And yeah.
Or so, you can send an email to Bailey. There are some places that have Bailey at khum.com.
Bailey, that's B-A-Y-L-E-Y.
You know how to spell my name. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah. But here's some messages. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to KHUM. You're listening to KHUM. We have a cannabis compliance panel going on right now. In addition to me, I also have Andy Powell, who is a co-moderator.
Senior executive moderator.
I'm the senior executive. You're the vice executive. Huh?
You're not as old as I am. Anyways, thanks for joining us here on KHUM Radio Without the Rules. I'm from KWPT The Point with the Rules, and we're joined here by Natalie DeLapp of the Environmental Protection Information Center and Adona White of the North Coast Region Water Quality Control Board. Too kind to still stick around here with us.
We just received a phone call with some more questions regarding the for Adona. It's benefits to starting a watershed associations, and what are the parameters to start one?
That's really up to those who form that group. I mean, the concerns that are often addressed by a watershed group relate to shared resource issues. That could be roads, it could be stream flow, it could be identifying what are kind of the main sediment drivers or land use considerations in a watershed. And it can be all encompassing, and it's going to vary what the focus is depending on what the resource needs are. In fire prone areas, chances are those groups, fire would be a very relevant topic. Out on the coast, it may be more related to stream flows and sediment, for example. But it really depends on what the needs are. The difference between a road association and a watershed group, again, is that focus. And we would encourage watersheds, sub-watersheds, groups, neighborhoods with shared resource concerns to group up and prioritize and address those.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, you know, like we all have been talking about, these are complicated issues, and resource management is very difficult if it's just one person. But when we start working together, you know, if we're working to reduce fuel loads and increase water flows, and I mean, these sharing resources, the road networks, it's going to be so much easier if people are working together. Road associations and watershed associations may be more able to request grant monies from the state in the future to do these larger improvements over like a single individual.
Yeah, and I would just add on to that topic of grants. Absolutely. If a group can get together and demonstrate they've already looked at the watershed and identified what the needs are and have prioritized it and are ready for implementation, a group could partner with a nonprofit or a local agency and apply for grant funds. Whereas if it's just an individual says, hey, I have this feature on my property and I'd really like to fix it, it's hard to demonstrate that it's going to benefit the watershed as a whole very much. And that's essentially the state of grants right now, is they really want to benefit a whole watershed.
Okay. I just received another question here. They say, regarding water rights, are there plans to allow the landowners north of the Mattole River to apply for small irrigation water rights instead of appropriative rights? The level of effort between the two water right paths is significantly different.
Yes, as I understand it, the State Water Board Division of Water Rights is currently working on developing a more streamlined registration similar to the small irrigation registration that's available, but it's not available in the Eel River and north of the Mattole. But they're working on that specifically for commercial cannabis cultivation, and it would be streamlined, meaning that it would be a lot easier, shorter pathway, less CEQA documentation than the full-blown appropriative application.
And I just want to follow up on that. This came on the heels of recent California trailer bill language that was part of the governor's trailer bill. And within that, there were maybe 40 pages of cleanup language for the Medical Marijuana Regulation Safety Act, where, you know, the governor of California is really working with cannabis cultivators, manufacturers, processors, distributors, and retail and consumers to be able to create this regulatory process for the state and with the agencies. So, you know, the governor gave explicit direction to the State Water Resources Division of Water Rights, you know, work on this, you know, and gave them that authority. So we know we need to say, you know, a big thank you to our state legislators, our, you know, our larger bureaucrats at the state agencies and our governor. You know, everybody's working on this together to move us into this new paradigm. So
it's something nice about living in California. Forward thinking, moving along.
It's the golden state.
Yeah.
Now it's
yeah.
going to be a golden and green state.
Hey, yeah. The golden green. So again, you can send questions. We've got a little bit of time left here with Nathan DeLapp, Executive Director of EPIC, and Adonna White of the Water Board. You can email questions to bailey@khum.com.
Or
studio at khum.com. Or give us a call. What's the number here?
786-5486.
We have Natalie and Adonna here probably for about another 8 minutes or so. And then they've got various appointments they should be getting to before too long, but I'll leave it at that. So, Natalie, I wanted to ask really quickly, I see you have a very nice-looking handbook in front of you. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So there, EPIC and Mad River Alliance, working in conjunction with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, Humboldt Green, and California Growers Association. Yes, that was off the top of my head. I've got all the logos on the back. So together we put together this 2016 compliance handbook for cannabis farmers and cannabis farmers workshop series. People might have heard about those. We did about six of them all around the county, January through April.
Different watersheds.
We held one in Blue Lake, the Van Dusen, Matoll, Mateel, Trinity, and very well attended. It was great to have so many people coming out. I think we had over 500 people attending all of those events. We had people from the Water Board, the county, our supervisors came out, and it was really good to see people working together. But one of the things we did was we created this compliance handbook. And I want to say that this was a labor of love. I worked on it personally, working with my colleagues. And basically what we did was distill about 150 pages of state and, well, basically state and county regulations down into 22 pages.
The Cliff Notes.
This is the Cliff Notes version of it. And what it contains is information on the state laws, MRSA, now MRCA.
Yeah, with the cannabis now.
Now cannabis, not marijuana. There is a citizen's guide to the Humboldt County Commercial Medical Marijuana Land Use, which did they change the name of
not
that
yet.
One too?
Humboldt County is a little bit behind.
We're still medical marijuana.
Still using that racist term.
There's information from the Department of Pesticide Regulation for dealing with pesticides and herbicides. There is a section from Department of Fish and Wildlife dealing with regulatory compliance of stream diversions and complying with the Water Board order. And finally, a citizen's guide to creating a water board, the Water Resources Protection Plan. So, you know, I just want to say people can pick up these compliance handbooks. They're distributed all around the county. I've left a box of them here at KHUM. They're at the North Coast Horticulture Supply Stores. They're down at Daisy's Supply, Ronzo's Garden Supply. So you can pick them up at a lot of the garden supply centers. And, you know, this will start giving you the resources you need to you know, be able to contact regulatory agencies, engineering firms, permitting consultants, soil consultants, attorneys, insurance agents, and public interest organizations.
Is there an online counter?
Yeah. There is an online component to this. People can go to, I have an easy website, either wildcalifornia.org or salmonsafecannabis.com. It's available in a PDF version there. What's nice about the PDF version is all the links are hot links. So you can just directly click and email Dave Manthorn from Department of Fish and Wildlife. And finally, I just want to give a huge shout out to my colleagues for helping me put this handbook together, and a shout out to my husband, Jeff Hinton, who is an engineer and really helped me put together the waterboard section. You know, he understood it and was like, this is what we've got to do. And if he wasn't my editor, I would not have been able to put this thing together. So, you know, big thanks to Jeff and everybody else and all the businesses that have really stepped forward to, you know, put this on. I mean, we've got, you know, High Tide Permaculture, Humboldt Green, Omsberg Preston, Humboldt, Pacific Watershed Associates, Royal Gold, Wonderland Nursery, Matol Sustainable Farmers Guild, True Humboldt, Emerald Family Farms, Matol Restoration Council, Samara Restoration, Trimsines, NHS, and more. I mean, it was just a really amazing project to work on, working with state agencies, nonprofits, businesses and community groups to put this on, because we did it for the community. We want the resources out there. We want people to have the tools necessary to, you know, navigate this path forward. Right. So
that's good. That was a nice long list. Almost like the title of a waterboard order.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Kay Hem. Thanks for being patient. You still there? On the air? It looks like we lost them for a moment. But anyway, there's another emailed question. How does the discharge ordinance apply to cultivators in the coastal zone?
Uh-oh, the coastal zone.
Oh, no. That's a big thing.
It's not ready yet.
Oh, so there's the county ordinance for operations in the coastal zone has yet to be developed.
Still waiting on the Coastal Commission, I think, to chime in on the coastal zone.
With respect to the Water Board's order, that applies throughout the North Coast region and including in the coastal zone.
Okay.
I would add at this point that even if somebody's not pursuing commercial permitting or commercial cultivation licensing...
Can't hurt to engage with the Water Board.
Well, we are neutral with respect to commercial versus personal use, medical versus recreational. If you have more than 2,000 square feet of cannabis or smaller operations with a potential discharge of waste, you're required to enroll with us, even if the other licenses and permits aren't triggered.
Okay. So we
cast our net wider because it's really about the land disturbing activities and the potential of runoff to streams.
So then working and enrolling with the Water Board shouldn't be seen as part of a bigger package necessarily. It can. It's an independent thing that kind of needs to be done if you're over 2,000 square feet, regardless of where you sit with the county's permitting process, if you're in the coastal zone, if you're in the inland zone.
That's correct.
Okay. If you're in Humboldt County, Trinity County, Mendocino County, Del Norte County, other counties?
Yes, other counties.
Other counties.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter where you are.
I didn't keep up with that. But yes, Russian River north to the Oregon border and east, including the Klamath Trinity.
Yeah, so if you are cultivating cannabis in excess of 2,000 square feet, it's not kind of. You need to enroll in this order.
And it may be smaller operations as well. If you're growing a smaller number of plants or smaller square footage, but you have stream crossings that are puking sediment into the streams every storm, then you're required to enroll, develop a plan to fix it up, and proceed with implementing it. And I would also offer that, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of compliance assistance. We touched on enforcement. I would like to point people to another resource and thing that we participate in, which is we do respond to complaints. It, you know, not everybody is interested in coming into compliance or necessarily practicing good land stewardship. And there are a lot of egregious circumstances out there.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. It just means
it
that...
there's a cat in a tree, I think.
Yes, or something like that in Ferndale. Yeah, happens all the time.
Maybe I'll wait to talk until that's over.
Also, it could be Ferndale telling us it's time to wrap up before too long.
Could it actually be a tsunami?
We'll find out.
Don't start any rumors.
No.
Yeah, you don't want to freak people out. I don't think it is that, or I would get, messages all over the place.
I've always appreciated how they can't just do it once or twice. It has to ring, five times, six times. So that's always great. So
I know that Lolita Fire just responded to a vehicle in the water at the South Jetty. So it's probably in response to that. They're probably calling out Ferndale as well. So, yeah, one person has been pulled out of the vehicle.
Well, so before we wrap things up here, because I know you guys have to go, Adona?
Yes, with respect to complaints, if you're aware of a situation that's, you know, egregious water quality impacts, or you're suspect of those, then you can contact us on our website again, which is www.waterboards.ca.gov/northcoast. Click on cannabis. There's a section for complaints, and on there you can click that link and you can file a whole suite of environmental complaints, and they get channeled to the proper agencies. And we do take complaints very seriously, and in recent times a number of complaints have come in that we have investigated, and they have actually played out into some pretty serious enforcement actions. And so it's a process that works, and I would strongly encourage people who are the bad actors in your neighborhood to proceed with through the complaint process. And we can treat those as anonymous complaints. Okay. And keep the
make your neighbors too grumpy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, okay. So I would encourage people to report if they see something that's out of sorts.
You know, and on the flip side of that, because I understand that there is a really strong anti-narc culture in this community. You know, it's not really... it's very frowned upon to call in complaints. And so I like to recommend the good neighbor policy. You know, pick up a stack of these compliance handbooks, you know, bake some cookies, go meet your neighbors, go knock on their gates and say, hey, look, you know, your greenhouse is really, you know, it's glowing. Did you know that's no longer legal? Are you aware? Because a lot of people are really not paying attention to the fact that these ordinances and regulations and processes are even happening.
There goes that again. We have somebody who's calling in. We'll take one more phone call. KM.
Hi, I had a real quick question. I tuned in a little bit.
Here, can you hold on for just a second? I need to wait for the siren to be done. It's kind of hard to hear you through the headphones. Just skip one moment. I'm sorry. This is...
So talk amongst yourselves.
Talk amongst yourselves. Thank you for being patient.
And perhaps while we're waiting for the siren to end, and before we wrap up and take this last phone call, again, you could head over to salmonsafecannabis.com, wildcalifornia.org, and if I remember this correctly, waterboards.ca.gov/cannabis.
North Coast/Northcoast.
I was
and click on the cannabis link.
And then click on the cannabis link.
If you Googled North Coast Regional Water Board, it pretty much comes up. Yes.
Okay, so thanks for your patience, caller. What's your question?
Hi, okay, I tuned in at the end of a mail speaking about something that was going on Sunday, and I'm curious if you could elaborate or repeat whatever seminar is happening Sunday for $150.
Yeah, let's hope Bailey was paying attention.
Yes, this Sunday and next Sunday, they're holding a seminar on over at the Humboldt County Planning and Department Office. It's $150 for that. It goes from 1 until 5 p.m. And you can register by calling 707-268-3795.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. So... we are going to wrap this up now. I do want to, again, thank Steve Lazar, who was on the phone earlier, sitting in his Corvette somewhere in Old Town, and worth the Planning and Building Department. I want to thank Natalie DeLapp, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center, and Adona White here of the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for going over time and hanging out with us here. And Bailey, we are going to be podcasting this later, so if you weren't able to tune into the entire cannabis compliance panel... you can find it
at khum.com.
See, I was setting you up for that.
Nice. And thank you very much for being a co-moderator on this panel.
Pleasure. Appreciate thank it. You guys very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank to be you here. All for having us.
And, that's you know, everybody, check out, get your permits, get your garden up to code. We can do this together.
Yep.
SalmonSafeCannabis.com.
Well, we're going to go ahead and take a short break, play some more commercials, and we'll be back with Larry in just a few minutes. You're listening to KHUM.